Coming up next on This Week in Radio Tech, Jake Bechtold is with us. Jake's taking on a new job where he's the director of engineering for about 10 FM stations. Man, I think there's an AM involved too. And what is he finding out as he really gets into this job? We're going to talk about ransomware, how to protect against that, some great ways to network your sites together, and what I like and what I don't like. It's coming up next on Twerked. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about literally everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. Hey, I'm Kirk Harnack. I'm in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee, on this hot or warm anyway, August summer afternoon on a Thursday. I'm delighted to be here and glad to have you along with us too. We get to gather some engineers together and talk about radio engineering and sometimes non-engineering. We have a good time here. It's a gorgeous day here in Nashville, and well, it seems like it's been a long day, and I've been looking forward to the show all day long, and here it is. Now, without further ado, let's bring in my co-host, and that's Chris Tarr. Chris, good to see you, man.
Good to see you too. I am down here in my secret lair in Muguanago, Wisconsin, where it's actually the sun just came out. It's been cloudy and rainy all day, which is, I guess, good and bad. I was supposed to get some tower work done today, but I didn't really want to go and do it. So we postponed it until tomorrow. So I guess it's kind of a blessing. I don't mind the rain. It got me out of, you know, having to go do tower stuff. That it's been just one of those busy, busy weeks where I had lots of little things going on. So I much rather enjoyed being in the office today than actually having to go out and mess with towers.
Hey, let me ask you about your office. Now, you say you're in your secret lair. You're in the basement, which is not fully underground, right? Because there's light streaming into the window.
Correct. That is correct. Yeah, it's kind of a split level, but the way our basement or the house is built was we really weren't built. And this area has a pretty high water table, so
yeah.
If you were to actually look out my window, it's built up on kind of a mound. So if you look out my window, you can actually see, you know, you're above street level out here. So
yeah,
those are nice egress windows. And I kind of took over the basement for now. I'm waiting for my 21-year-old son to move out so I can have an actual room for an office. But until then, I am down here in the basement, and this is where I do most of my work. And the couch back there is where my coworker Louie the dog usually keeps an eye on things for me. And
the way your house is arranged, now that looks like a comfortable family living room. Do you use it like that, mm-hmm. or do you use it upstairs one for family?
We used to come down here more as a living room, and you know, we have a family room upstairs, so splits. A lot of times the kids will come down here, and you know, as you saw with the balloons a couple weeks ago, you know, they tend to take it over in the evening, and then, you know, the old guy sits upstairs watching TV and, you know, right down the hall from my bedroom. So at 8 o'clock, when Murder, She Wrote is over, you know, I can walk down the hall and go to bed and, you know, dream about the early bird dinner and everything.
Well, Chris, let me tell you about our guest. Our guest is Jake Bechtold, and Jake's actually at home right now. He loves radio so much, he's actually outfitted his bathroom to look like a radio station control room. Let's bring Jake in and see this amazing water closet. Jake, welcome in.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, you know, I love this place so much. I actually sold my house and just live at the station full time. Caught underneath the desk. There's a shower back somewhere other part of the building. You know, all the luxuries you need.
I just made that up about Jake's bathroom. So anyway, Jake, you commandeered a control room to join us on the show today.
I did. Yes, I did. The control room of our classic rocker here in the building, and which luckily has a voice tracked afternoon show. That's how it happens to be. Yep. So the studio's open. So there you go. That's the studio I've commandeered for the afternoon.
Now, okay, I got to ask you, when I commandeer a radio station control room, like if I'm at my own stations in Mississippi or Hawaii or even American Samoa, I usually bring my laptop in and I have to wrangle the microphone wiring. Are you going through the board and through a normal like production computer to join us today, or did you drag some computer in there?
No, I'm tapped into the Vox Pro computer. That's already got the audio run from the mic and stuff. So other than adjusting a couple of things to make it do what I wanted, that was a easier option than trying to connect my laptop up, which I could have done. There's ways. There's always a way. But this is by far the easier way to get it done.
You know, prior to COVID, it used to be that when I would talk to an engineer, hey, just join us from one of your production rooms or something, they'd always say, we don't have a webcam in there. You can get one for $50, but you have a webcam, obviously. Has that become more standard equipment in radio station control and production rooms, so you can do the Skype and Zoom stuff?
Actually, not. The webcam was sitting in my office.
Okay,
you brought I brought it in here, just convenience. Yeah, though we don't. No webcams for anything, web conferences or anything like that in the studios. But we do plenty of video in the studios, but not any web conferencing. So yeah, it's just a standard run of the mill webcam on the computer. It's not a standard issue around here. But I brought one into for today's purposes.
Chris Tarr, your station's Magnum Media, a whole bunch of studios across the state. There are webcams becoming standard issue for you guys?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we do a lot of live stuff in the studios over video. And not only that, but I think a lot of times too, like with the racing show, the guys like to, be able to stream that stuff as they're doing it. So I think more and more, even the simple webcams, but on the other hand, as Jake mentioned, webcams are so prevalent on phones now. And, even with the new version of OS for Mac, you can stream your phone to your computer, the phone cam to the computer and send that out. So, I think, for a long time, there was this whole mounting the really nice cameras in the studio and pointing them all around, and to which the jocks pretty much ignored them and continued to use their phones. So I think that's really kind of where that went.
Yeah, gotcha. Hey, gentlemen, Nautel is one of our sponsors. We always make a quick mention at the beginning of every show. Nautel, their Tuesday Transmission Talk Tuesdays are coming back, but not this month. So they want me to make sure you know about the resources they have on their website. And they got a ton of videos on the website. Maybe you're the kind of person that likes to watch a video. You can fast forward through stuff you already know and then stop and watch stuff you don't know. And they have videos from tips and tricks, air chain innovation, introduction to their new VX series of transmitters. They even have some stuff from the Torch Show on there. Even have some videos that are in Spanish. So, they try to hit their customer base that speaks Spanish. So lots and lots of videos on how to get things done, some tips, some tricks, some downright instruction on how to get something going. So check that out. The Nautel website, go to resources and then look for videos. They also have white papers. They also have a lot of articles on how to do certain things. Like, for example, maybe you're doing like I'm going to be doing, hooking up my first FM HD radio facility. Hey, I've done audio processing for lots of other people's HDs, but I've never hooked up my own HD. Well, I'll be doing that hopefully in a few months in American Samoa. And so, yeah, I'm going to take advantage of all the Nautel resources that have to do with hooking up HD. Chris Tarr, if you register properly, you get access to even more stuff on the Nautel website. What's your favorite thing there at Nautel.com?
Oh, the FM mapping tool I use all the time. They've got this great tool. It creates Longley Rice type of maps. And, obviously not scientific, not good for any kind of, exhibits or anything, but really fantastic for doing what ifs. Even simple things like my coworker was wondering why he was having a hard time getting one of our signals at his house. Well, I was able to run that map and show him that he lives kind of in a valley. And so the signal shoots right over him. So there's some great stuff there. Also just some good white papers and things like that. It's the NUG, the Nautel Users Group, fantastic resource on their website.
Good deal. Nautel.com. Thanks, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. We'll let you know as soon as they restart the transmission. Talk Tuesdays. That we'll have to get Jeff Wilton to get back to his house instead of being on the road so he can host those things. They're a great time to get together, and you get to ask questions, too. So stay tuned for that. All right. Jake Bechtold is our guest today. Chris Tarr and Jake are with me. And you know what? What really, the reason I invited Jake on, Jake, you've been on the show before years ago. Remind me of your role. Why did we have you on the show some years ago? What were we talking about?
Well, I think at the time I was just what was my official title back then? It was even different owner of the company back then, but I was part IT guy, part engineer in training, and really kind of learned the ropes and really kind of get my feet wet. And, I've learned 10 years later, which has been almost 10 years. I think it was March of 13, if I remember right. I didn't know anything back then. So learned a lot in 10 years. I'll tell you that right now.
None of us did.
So today's show is what have I learned in 10 years? So we're going to concentrate 10 years of learning down to a 1 hour show. I decided to name this show An Engineer's Life because, yeah, I follow a lot of engineers on social media, and I love what people post. For example, Tom Driggers, we're going to have Tom on the show, but he posts from all these typically West Coast transmitter sites, and he's got great pictures of things he's doing at transmitter sites. And so, Jake, you were posting some things on social media, and it looked like you were moving around quite a bit, doing this, doing that at different sites, a lot like what Chris Tarr does and told us about some adventures last week.
And actually, you know what? I ran into Tom Driggers. Surprisingly, or I guess maybe not surprisingly enough, our paths crossed. And one of the transmitters he put in was at a site that I have in Hoka, Minnesota. So actually, he and I got together and I was helping him out. It was like a week ago. It was so funny because, you know, like you, I follow all these people running back and forth. And it just happened that, you know, he's working his way across the country and our paths crossed at this one site.
And what's funny is I've actually worked with Tom at a site as well. I do some contract stuff on the side for a small LPTV here in the area. And he was doing some repack work for them about 2 years ago. So him and I worked together on a project. So funny, you name drop somebody and all three of us know who he is. So
it's exactly. Them,
so
that's the business. Well,
that's exactly it. Absolutely.
It's small, but as Stephen Wright used to say, it's a small world, but I wouldn't want to have to paint it. Okay. All right. I'll stick to the engineering part. So, Jake, tell us what you're doing now, and then we're going to hear from some from you about some adventures, what's been on your radar lately, and we're going to have a segment. Oh, I haven't even told Chris Tarr about this. Chris, I'm sorry. We're going to have a segment later in the show called Things I Like and Things I Don't. So be thinking about things I like and things I don't. And things I like, you know, that's stuff to help other engineers. And things I don't like, yeah, you can just bitch and moan and whine and complain all you want to. About radio stuff.
All right.
Okay.
Oh, I was going to say.
Yeah.
I'm already learning it, you know.
So Jake, let's jump into what are you doing now? And you know, tell us about the job, because I think it's pretty interesting what you're doing.
Yeah. So I just took over beginning of this month as chief engineer for Radio FM Media, which is the group I was working with when I was on last time. It's changed owners, changed management, but I just took over as chief engineer. The chief that was here has decided he wanted to be full-time contract, start doing his own thing, and gave the reins over to me. I'm not sure why, but they did. So I'm now taking care of, and I should say, him and I together, we were also doing stuff for another group of stations about 100 miles west of here. So total, the two of us were taking care of 30 signals, which was a handful. I have to say it was a handful, but with this new arrangement, I'm now just taking care of 10 signals based out of Fargo. So it's a lot easier to manage that. And it's, you know, it's one man show, but they're stations that have been well maintained over the last 20, 30 years. These stations have always been the leaders in the market, and it's great. You know, it's almost, you know, is it corny to say I'm honored? That almost too corny, I think, too cheesy. But it is cool to be able to take over these stations and hopefully maintain that. And I should also add, so on top of the 10 stations, I also do some engineering for the college here in town, North Dakota State, and their football network, which our sports station is the flagship of. So 10 stations and a football network. So even with the reduction in work, it's still plenty going on around here.
Have you started football games yet?
No, our first game is next Saturday, the 3rd. So a little bit of time yet.
I'd be interested in hearing about, you know, your remote gear and how you're kind of planning to make sure that first time you go out, whether it's a home game or an away game, the first time you go out, you've got all your ducks in a row and you'll have a successful broadcast. I'm interested in hearing about that. We're going to take a quick break, but coming up when Jake comes back, we're going to talk about some things like one of the things that Jake has done is simplified some of the IP infrastructure at his station. So he's working on that and trying to reduce exposure to ransomware and other malware type threats. So we'll be talking about that. And I think Chris and Jake will have some ideas to share about that. That's something that I've got to do at my own stations. And many of you watching or listening, you know, if you're the IT person or if you're in charge of the IT person, you know, this responsibility falls on you to try to keep your operations safe from ransomware and malware. Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcast Bionics and the amazing features available to you in the Bionic Studio. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast-critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These can be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere, and Skype TX for Radio brings high-quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
This is the kind of stuff that every broadcaster needs to at least consider putting in their studios and providing with, if you got talent at home, provide them with it too, because you can really get great social media interaction with the tools from the Bionic Studio at Broadcast Bionics. Check it out at bionic.radio or bionics.co.uk. I know, so many. You know, there's going to be links in the show notes. So if you need to find them, you can Google them, Broadcast Bionics, or check out our show notes. All right, we're here with Chris Tarr and Jake Bechtold, and talking about Jake's new position of a chief engineer. Jake, when you moved into this position, you've been doing engineering anyway, but how did the responsibility, the weightiness, did anything really change for you in terms of you wake up in the morning, do you feel like you're responsible for more stuff? What's that been like just moving to the new position?
You know, honestly, for me, there hasn't been much of a change. It's still the same old routine. Check the phone in the morning, make sure nothing blew up overnight, you know, things like that. Yeah, as far as day-to-day stuff goes, it really hasn't changed that much. The biggest thing for me has been there are a few things on the back end, as far as dealing with vendors and whatnot that the former chief engineer would always handle. And now I'm having to go back and go, oh yeah, that's right, I have to deal with these guys now. So, you know, figuring out who to contact, working through things like that. It's all my, you know, very minor things, but you know, all things that I have to take care of that now. So, but I mean, overall, no, nothing really changed. It's the same job. It's hopefully not putting out so many fires, and it's maintaining stuff. So
speaking of fires,
it's funny.
Go ahead, Chris.
I was gonna say my first day as chief engineer in Milwaukee, kind of reminded me of that, is I showed up to work for the first day. I got in, I sat down at my desk, kind of got things arranged. And I said to the receptionist, I need to get my voicemail set up. Who do I talk to for that? She looked at me and went, well, that's you. That's your job. And I'm like, I had no idea what to do. So I had to quick, you know, find the manual somewhere and read up on how to do that. So yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. It's like, it's a whole new world when you're the guy, you know, to figure out what has to happen.
Yeah. Well, speaking of priorities, projects, well, fires, you mentioned, Jake. I'm curious from both Jake and Chris, how do you guys track your projects, things that need to be done, you know, today or this hour or this week sometime or whenever we get to it? How do you prioritize and track? And I've been threatening myself for years to put up a dry erase marker here in my office. And for some reason, I haven't gotten around to getting that done yet. Let me hit up Chris first. Chris, you seem to be the pro at this. What's your method for tracking this?
It's funny because as you mentioned that, I looked up at my whiteboard on my wall here where I have all that stuff written down. There's a couple of tools that I use. For long-term projects, I use Microsoft Project. And what I like about that is you can set dependencies and you can set who needs to do what. So I have my whole team in there and I can kind of assign people to teams. And as deadlines slide or dependencies change, I can change one dependency and it changes the entire project. That's for the long-term projects. For short-term stuff, I love the to-do list on my iPhone. Anytime, you know, somebody's talking to me, one of my coworkers or whatever, and there's something I got to remember, I get in here and I add it to my list and I can set, you know, dates and times. So it pops up an alert when there's something going on. So I know, like, for example, if I have to leave the house, you know, or when I'm leaving the house, I have to bring something with me, to a site. I will, put that in my to-do list. And actually, as I leave the house, it pops up and says, hey, don't forget to bring this with you. So, you know, it really does. And I'm sure Jake will agree. you know, it takes a lot of organization to do this, especially when you're the person in charge, because, you know, you have to, and when you have so many stations, in my case, more than 25, it can get out of control pretty quickly.
And speaking of to-do lists real quick, what, which software do you like to handle that for you?
I actually just use Apple's built-in to-do that's built into the iPhone. I think it does really, you know, everything I need. I just need something to take quick notes and, you know, set alarms to them.
I wonder if I get rid of it because I haven't found it yet. And I looked in the App Store just now, but.
What's great is if you use iCloud on the web, it shows up on the web page too. So, you know, I'm deeply in the Apple ecosystem. So I've got, you know, I've got an iPad, an iPhone, I've got a MacBook. So, you know, all of that stuff kind of works together. So no matter what I've got with me, even when I'm using the PC that I have for work, I can open up the iCloud page and there's my stuff.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the Google Docs world, just so that, you know, everybody else will know what I'm up to as well. Especially maybe the three-letter agencies or I don't know.
They already know. They're just listening to my phone, so they know. Hey, all right. I'm going to work now.
Jake, how are you keeping, well, prioritizing and keeping track of these things that pop up, especially new? I mean, there could be something at a transmitter site that's just about to bite you that you may not have discovered yet. How do you keep track of things?
Well, just like Chris, I got the whiteboard in my office that got a list of things to keep an eye on. There's also a kind of like a notepad on my desk that always. Mainly I use just to scribble notes and stuff, but I will put a checklist on there. If there's, you know, something needs to get done this week, I'll put that on there. But along with Chris's suggestion of the to-do list on iPhone, I guess I took it back a step and I just got an Excel spreadsheet. It was really convenient when I had, 30 stations. Cause I just kind of marked, each town I'm in, what needs to get done. And that was actually really handy because if I was there handling something else, hey, what else do I need to work on while I'm here? Oh, hey, that just needs a quick reboot. Okay, I can go take care of that really fast while I'm here, get something else done. So less critical now that I'm only in charge of one cluster, but still just to have, even an Excel spreadsheet. And then I save that in, I'm a Dropbox guy. So it's available on my phone, on all my devices that I have Dropbox on. And but same concept is it's a syncing list of everything needs to get done. And I can, you know, I have to go back and look at it. I've got like drop downs for priority and, you know, that sort of thing. So I kind of went a little crazy with the Excel spreadsheet one day, but yeah, it's the same concept. It's a digital checklist.
Hey, Chris, are you speaking of the Reminders app on your iPhone?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So you like it. All right. Well, I'm going to try it out.
I love it. I mean, it's very simple, and I like simple because again, you know, this is the one now project is a lot more difficult and it's a lot more involved, but with Reminders, it's just, again, that's my simple, like just now as Jake was talking, I had a message coming in from my coworker about a thing I got to file with the FCC. So I just quick pop that into Reminders and there it is. So it's just a really good way because I tend to go through a lot of email. And so if I just leave it in the email without acting on it, there's a good chance I'll miss it. So, and with Reminders, again, to be able to schedule those, I can also go back and say, okay, you know, this STA needs to be extended on this date. And I could put that in my Reminders with a date to get, you know, reminded. And also then it keeps my calendar clean. If I'm not having to put all my, Reminders in a calendar, I can just save that for appointments and things.
You know, I actually have cut down on my workload significantly by leaving all of my to-dos in my email. So I don't see most of them.
Yeah, I just don't do them. And that makes it really easy. I just ignore them, whatever.
All right, well, let's turn to an engineering topic. And you know, it used to be, if we were doing this show 20 years ago, we would definitely be talking about antennas and transmission lines and transmitters and you know, which modulator is, you know, which transmitter manufacturer had the better FM modulator and you know, which AM transmitter is doing low-level modulation or high-level or class AB. And we don't get to talk about that stuff much anymore, partly because a lot of that stuff is digital nowadays. In an FM transmitter, we have a lot of numerically controlled oscillators, for example. So there's not a lot of innovation to be done. They all work, you know, pretty much perfectly, mathematically perfectly. So let's talk about what has popped up. And, you know, so many broadcasters have been hit by malware and ransomware. And Jake, before the show, you were telling me that one of your projects is to make things safer and safer and safer with the IT systems at your radio stations. Talk to me about the scope of what you're doing and give us some ideas of how you're attacking this problem.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing of it is, you know, 10 years ago, so many of us, and I, you know, I'll admit I still have a couple of them. You want a remote access to a computer? Oh, I'll port 4 VNC. I'll make up some really high number that no one will ever be able to guess and life will be good. Yeah, that doesn't work anymore. They're getting smarter and smarter, and if nothing else, they'll just spam the port and, you know, DDoS the machine or something. So you've really got to go to a VPN. Whether, you know, and you know, site VPN is something that I implemented last year. All the sites finally got that done, and just, you know, not, and that, you know, in turn, all the random port forwards for even dumb things like RDS or for I guess RDS is probably the big one, but even for audio for any IP codecs. Just having that internally, you don't have to worry about port forward. It's most definitely the safer way to go. Even if it's something that it's, you know, you think it's never going to get hacked, it's going to get hacked eventually. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so that's been kind of in my project. Is anything that's stolen a port forward, find a way to get rid of it and leave the port forwards to the things that absolutely have to have a port forward on them, which is not very many anymore. But you know, and also I guess on that, you know, so site to site VPN. But then also a VPN client for the users that want remote access. You know, I think COVID taught us this, the days of, you know, only the engineers have remote access. Well, that's gone. The users have to have remote access. Now that's just the way it is. But same thing, you can't, you know, you could just port forward, but you shouldn't be port forwarding. That's just, you're opening yourself up for risk. So finding a VPN client, I went with OpenVPN. It works pretty well. There's a couple others. I know people like WireGuard. That's a popular one, but you got to have a VPN client for the users as well. And same thing, make it so it, you know, traffic is encapsulated. There's no port forwards. And that's just, those are two things. And to someone who's, you know, in the IT, that might sound like, oh, that's obvious. But if you're handling a bunch of stations that, you know, maybe haven't kept up with the times, you got to do it. And I would say you got to do it now. Get on that and get it done. It's becoming more and more of a problem with all the, you know, bots out there spamming ports, and then, you know, the ransomware, which may or may not be able to get through a port, but There's so many more things out there than there used to be, and radio stations are a target. That's just the fact of life. So, I guess that's the big thing I've been up to lately is taking care of that.
I want to hear some specifics on equipment from both you and Chris, but I think it's key to point out there are three really common types of VPNs. And Jake, when you started talking about, you said a point-to-point VPN to different sites. And that's one thing. That's like one router talking to another router, and everything gets encrypted in an IP tunnel so that the routers don't have to accept anything coming into them that didn't come from that point-to-point VPN, a known other point, or maybe they accept things from another kind of VPN, and that's what a lot of folks call the road warrior VPN. So this is when you've got employees that are not in the building, but they need access to things that are in the building, and that would be a commonly called a road warrior VPN. That's where your open VPN comes in, I suppose. And then there's the last kind of VPN, and this is the kind that's advertised on every podcast that I listen to, you know, NordVPN or Super Express VPN or Skyrockets Unknown VPN. And these are the ones that some people say they have value, others say that they may not have a lot of value. But the point is, if you're in a place where other people may see your traffic, they won't see your traffic, except all your traffic does come out at kind of known points around the world, and you get to pick where those points are. But those are also the points that, you know, some three-letter agencies get to watch because they know everything's coming out there. And it's less of a secret at that point. So with that set up, there's different kinds of things when we mean VPN. Jake, what's been your preferred brand of router, and how did you learn about setting up point-to-point VPN?
I've kind of standardized on Ubiquiti, and the Edge router series. I've kind of really like those. I found that the structure is very much similar to like Cisco IOS, but it's like a third of the price. Granted, there's no support. That's a reason why people don't like that. But for what we do, it works just fine. And the thing with Ubiquiti is anybody who's ever worked with it knows that it's a lot of knowledge base. You know, there's not a number you can call and ask them for help. It's more knowledge base. But all the information is available online, and if you do enough looking, you can figure out how to make it work. So that's the flavor I've gone to. I know people like PFSense, MikroTik. Those are all good ones, in my opinion. And we went EdgeRouter just because that was convenient. But I mean, all three of those are really good as far as routers that can support VPN.
Chris, how about you? Aren't you a SonicWall kind of guy?
I am a SonicWall guy, and I have same thing. I do VPN site to site for all of my sites. One of the side benefits too is I can come up with a very logical IP scheme for everything. So that makes it a whole lot easier to manage when you're talking about literally thousands of devices on your network. So for example, each of my network scheme is 10.1, and then each of my markets have the third subnet. So, lacrosse is 10.1.10 and Ford is 10.1.12. And I can do things like all of my Sage index are 50. So 10.1.10.50 is lacrosse's index. 10.1.12.50 is Ford's index. And then I can go one step further and the transmitter sites get a one. So for example, lacrosse sites are going to be transmitter sites are 10.1.110 subnet. So you can start really logically laying things out. And so I know, for example, all of my audio processors end with 100, 100, 101, 102. My studios are 10, 20, 30. so that kind of came out of my experience with Axia. I would always do that with Axia to make source numbers easy. But what I like about SonicWall is they're very easy to manage, and they have their own client for VPN. So, I can pretty much have the user download the VPN client. All they have to do is enter in their username and password, and they're good to go. And I can, easily adjust what they can and can't see, disable their access, whatever. And it all kind of just works together. And to set up the site-to-site VPNs and everything else, is really, really simple to do. And I do have some edge routers, a couple of sites where, I didn't really need to do a full-blown SonicWall setup. And they talk really easily to each other. So I have a couple of sites with edge routers and edge router X's. But I like the Sonic Wall. I've had zero problems with them. Support is really good. They've got, really good antivirus and other kinds of security things on the gateway. So I can do, ransomware prevention, antivirus, there's my coworker, Louie. And, those sorts of things on the gateway, and it's all kind of built in. So that's kind of my flavor. And I think firewalls and VPN appliances and things, they're kind of, and this sounds a little sexist, but they're kind of like women. We all have our own types that we like, blondes, brunettes, whatever, or even cars. We all have the kind of car that we like. I think a lot of these devices, it's just kind of what you prefer.
Did he go there, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, he did.
I did go there. I'm ashamed of myself.
It's okay. I thought he was going to say like everyone's favorite type of beer.
There you go. Beer. Some of us like Spotted Cow.
And then there's favorite transmitters.
That's right.
I know that they haven't been around in forever, and some people eviscerate me, but I like the old CCA transmitters, the blue ones made in Fairburn, Georgia, the light blue ones. I like those. They were so simple. They only had four parts in them, plus a couple of relays.
And then there's everybody else who thinks you're crazy. So
there you go.
For what it's worth, one of the stations when I first started here, they were still running on a CCA that was pushing 40 years old.
Yeah, so, I have one CCA that is that old, and it works well. I mean, we've had no problems with it, and I've got several other CCAs. And what's great is I do have John, one of my coworkers, has experience actually working with CCA, so he keeps these things running, and he does an amazing job. I mean, he just knows these things in and out. So, to be fair, I mean, they are. We've had very little problems with CCAs.
The ones that are like 40 years old, were they built in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, or are they? They're not from Atlanta, are they? For Fairburn, Georgia, are they? Do you know?
I don't know. They're scary looking. I can tell you that.
What color is the cabinet?
I don't remember. I just remember they have a bunch of toggle switches on the front with these lamps.
Oh, okay. Well, then that wouldn't be the Fairburn, Georgia CCA. That would be.
Yeah. We're not talking about the ones with the meters down towards the bottom. This is one that actually meters are at the top, and it's really ancient, but it runs great. That's probably the one transmitter that I'd never have problems with.
Wow. Wow. Oh my goodness.
Let's see. Ours was light blue. I don't remember what it was made, but it was light blue with black doors, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That sounds like.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Hey, we're going to talk about something much more modern than a 40-year-old CCA transmitter for just a minute. And that's something that is really helpful around today's today's studio builds are different. No longer are we wiring relays to the capstan motor of a cassette deck to do telescoped, air checks, right? We're not doing that anymore. Nor are we typically running heavy-duty incandescent Edison bulbs in the tally lights. These days, most of these are LED bulbs. Or maybe we're running the LED lights that are in modern mic arms, like the Mika mic arms and others. So you need a more modern light controller, and this is the Henry Superlight. Now, Henry makes a lot of cool things that are helpful. We've had Hank Landsberg on the show. It's been 2 or 3 years ago since we've had him on. But Hank just, designs stuff that really helps you build studios. And one of these things is the Henry Superlight. It's an LED tally light controller. Now, just like you may remember the Super Relay. And I'll bet Chris Tarr has installed a couple of super relays. Jake may be too young. I don't know. But the super light will take your contact closure from your audio console, right? And it will it can turn that into a flashing light output or a steady light output. And it can give you normally closed and normally open contact closures so that you can, you can control different things. For example, if you've got a phone that rings in the control room, but when the mic's on, you don't want it to ring. Well, one way to do that is to just take the ringer, take those wires out and bring it across the normally closed contacts on a Henry Superlight. It's a simple box. It's lightweight. It's easy to install. It's got these really convenient, I guess they're called Phoenix connectors on here. I hope I got that Hope I got that one right. But the other thing that makes the Superlight convenient, so many times we build several studios in a facility, and this can easily handle four different studios in a daisy chained wiring scheme. So you may end up putting these in a central wiring area, or you may put them in the ceiling of, you know, above wherever your light is or whatever. And you can see there in the lower right of this picture, if you're watching our podcast, you can see how they can be daisy chained together just to make the wiring a little bit easier, just to, so you can have your contact closures all come out of a single box, you know, like an Axia GPIO node from each of your studios, and you can go light different lights with that. The Henry Superlight LED Tally Light Controller. Go to henryeng.com to see all the stuff that Hank Landsberg designs for broadcast studios. And remember, he's got this incredibly good surge protector for single phase or three phase. It's a wonderful surge protector. Hank has been on the show to explain why it's the best, and I absolutely believe him. So check it out. Thanks a lot, Henry Engineering. And if you want to get Henry Engineering gear or any other brand of gear, you call my friends at Broadcasters General Store. Their phone number is 352, and then 622-7700. 352-622-7700. Or their website, as we're looking at right now on your screen, is bgs.cc. And they carry great stuff from Omnia, Telos, Angry Audio, of course, Henry Engineering, almost anything you want. And by the way, if you're doing some television work in your studios, they can get you lighting systems and cameras, just all kinds of good stuff. In fact, right there, if Suncast, if you scroll down, oh no, it's gone by. Chris is going to be by in a few minutes to tell you about a cool new product from Angry Audio, which you can get from Broadcasters General Store. Thanks a lot, BGS, bgs.cc, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we are on This Week in Radio Tech. Kirk Harnack, that's me. Jake Bechtold is our guest, and Chris Tarr is here as the interrogator. He doesn't take no for an answer. Jake, we got a couple more things to talk about. One of those is indeed protecting yourself from ransomware. And we talked a little bit about VPNs and firewalls and things like that. Okay, that's important. What else, Jake, are you doing to help protect your facilities against people clicking on the wrong stuff?
Well, the problem is there's you can do all the security things you want, but there's one thing that you cannot protect against, and that is users who do not know any better. And So the way I look at it is and obviously you educate them and teach them, you know, look at the links, make sure that everything looks right, and then, you know, that sort of thing. But I guess I worry more about not how to prevent it, but how to recover from a ransomware meltdown, as it were. And this actually happened at one of the stations I used to take care of, about 100 miles west of here. They had a individual, we'll leave nameless, who at one point clicked on a nefarious link, and all of a sudden I'm getting a call that everything in NextGen is orange. Which, if you ever use NextGen, means the file is gone. And it ate through the entire NextGen system. The good news, at least out of that, was that NextGen's got a local database mode. I think a lot of automations have this. Local database mode, so it's got a backup of files. So if it comes disconnected from the server, it can keep running. Thankfully, a majority of the files were saved by each air computer's local database. We were able to get a majority of that back pretty quickly. But then I was scrounging for music. Luckily that the music files were on the same numbers. These guys had the same music cuts in every market. So I had somebody send me the music cuts over and we just started loading everything back in. So having lived through that, the lesson learned is have a backup and have it in more than one place. The other thing I've read about is some of these ransomwares, depending on what machine it gets on, it'll even go after map drives and machines that weren't even affected. And just by having it connected over the network, it can start going at stuff, which is obviously not good. So, backup wise, I've got a machine in the building that's got a backup of the server. We do have two next gen servers for our automation. So there's at least a little bit of a backup there. But then I always make a point to, I have a daily backup to a external USB hard drive. And then once a week, I swap it out. And so there's always one hard drive connected backing up, and one is in my desk drawer, not connected to anything. Mm. So at least then, if we have a massive catastrophe, we can get things back pretty quickly. You know, we'll still be, you know, a week off or whatever, but it's better than losing those files altogether and being left with nothing. So, you know, the trick is have backups and have them in multiple places. You should be doing that anyway. But I mean, with ransomware, you just got to have a backup and just don't count on being able to protect yourself. I mean, do all the things to protect yourself from that, you know, antivirus, you know, watch for nefarious links, that sort of thing. But it's not if it's going to happen, it's when it's going to happen. And you just got to be ready for it.
Chris Starr, what do you think?
I totally agree. We're fortunate in that we don't really have anybody working in our offices. We're a distributed workforce. So generally, there isn't much of a vector to be able to get in to do anything. And we also use Google services for email and everything. So a lot of that stuff gets scanned. But I do put the fear of God in everybody. And, nothing makes more, you know, has more impact than saying, do you want to be that person? I do get a lot of people, emailing me questionable links. They'll say, hey, can you check this out? And I can do the research. Our policy is real simple, is if you get a link, it doesn't matter who it's from. If somebody sends you an attachment or a link, you are to call whoever sent that to you to verify that it was sent. And even if it, you know, especially if it's somebody you know, because that, you know, that's how they trick you a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, you go as far as to, if you have to have your automation systems on the same network, you know, only opening pathways that you absolutely need to have between those machines, between markets, same thing. And so I've got a file system that mirrors one another in two different markets, and there's only a couple of different ways they can see each other, so they can't jump. The other thing is to use network attached storage, because it's a lot harder for that stuff to run on those machines or even get into those machines. So, again, even with that, we use middleware to copy files from one part of the network to those machines. So nobody has a map drive to it. They may have a map drive to a different machine, or not a map drive rather, but you know, the malware may be able to hop into this intermediary machine, but all it's going to do is copy over some of the locked files. It won't overwrite the files we already have. So, you know, there are several ways. Jake made a very good point in, you know, anytime you can have a disconnected backup, you're going to be saved. And I lived through, you know, two big ransomware outbreaks at Intercom when I was there. So, you know, I did learn a lot from that as well. So it's just Jake is so right. You know, you can't control other people, and that's the ransomware makers count on that. You're not going to be able to automate your way into our system for ransomware. But if somebody happens to be in our building and they happen to open something up and it, you know, starts to get out there, you can only do so much. You know, it's an arms race at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris, what do you do to try to get employees to be on their best behavior? And I know that that's not 100%, but at least you can, what if you can get from, you know, 20% awareness of don't click on that unless you went and looked for it yourself, to a 98% awareness of that kind of thing.
Well, I would like to think that we're there. It's information. You know, it's a learning process. And anytime I see articles on this stuff, I send it out. I send out, you know, information on attack vectors, things like that, because I think that, you know, if they know, they have a better understanding of it. And I think that is a good part of how to get them to respond, because once they understand how this stuff works, you know, they start to look out too, because that it becomes something they understand then. And it's not just, hey, you click on this and this happens or it can't happen. They actually start to begin to understand the mechanics. And so, you know, they'll look at something and go, oh, this is a PDF file, but, you know, this sender, I wasn't really expecting anything from. So I'm going to call and verify that it's there. Or here's a link. I'm just going to run it by, you know, Chris and make sure that it's okay. And The other thing is my point of view, when they do that, to encourage that and to thank them and to, you know, give them that positive reinforcement. Hey, thanks for sending me that link. I checked it out. Fortunately, this one's good. You're good to go. And you know, always be sure to send me those links. So, you know, it's social engineering on our part as well. I think to get buy-in. And yeah, people are going to forget and they're going to click on things. And, you know, again, fortunately with the Google infrastructure, you know, we kind of rely on them to scan as well. Now, if it's something that's brand new and 0 day, that might not be possible, but so far, you know, they do a pretty good job of making sure that by the time we get it, it's been virus scanned and verified and good.
And Chris, by the way, I got your email about getting some Apple iTunes gift cards, and I'll get those to you a little bit later on today.
Oh, great. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I promise you it's just getting it to me so I can refund you the money.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Jake, do you have a tip or a technique that you are some way that you like to remind people? I like what Chris said. You don't want to be that guy who clicked on the link that brought the company down for 3 days. You don't want to be that guy. And no, cost us $1.5 million.
Yeah. Well, and we, you know, when I first, a couple years into me working here, we lived through a giant email crash that was not ransomware related. It was a on-prem Exchange server that's a story for a different time. But having lived through a massive email outage, our staff here, they're pretty good about keeping an eye on things. We have 365. So, you know, just like with Google, it, you know, has the virus scan on it. But just like Chris mentioned, I've got the staff pretty well trained here. If something doesn't look right, send it to me. I'll take a look at it and research it, and I'll let you know if it's good or not. And that's something I've been doing here for quite a while. And the people here are actually quite good about doing that. So, it just, you know, it takes some training, but I you know, Chris is absolutely right. You gotta, you know, make them afraid. You do not want to be that person.
Yeah. Yeah. Good deal. All right. We're going to do a little segment here before our next commercial break. And that segment is called Things I Like. We're going to also do a Things I Don't Like, but Things I Like. And I want to thank my friend and radio business partner, Larry Fuss, for turning me on to this thing I like. It's an app, and it's called Radioland. Radioland. Oh, somehow. There we go. And let's see if I can make it. Let's see if I can make it update so you can see what it does when it starts up. All right, let's try to. Oh, come on! I want to close the app here. Hang on, sorry, folks. I kind of know how to do this. All right, here we go. We'll start the app, and it starts up, and it acts like it's scanning the dial in your neighborhood. Okay, and you can set it for a different location, but by default, it's your location. So there we go. I've got WFSK, WVCP, WAYM, WKYU, and it gives you the signal strength you should expect. For example, KYU, well, isn't that in Bowling Green? Yeah, it's Bowling Green, Kentucky. I'm not going to be able to pick that up hardly. But you can also get coverage maps. And Chris, you had mentioned Longley Rice maps. And let's see here if I can get it to show a coverage map. Can show you a terrain profile. It's brought that up. And I realize you can't see this very well on my camera. There's a terrain profile, and it's slowly building up a coverage map. Here we go. Now let's see if, come on. Are you going to show me? Sometimes it's faster than others, but it can show you a Longley Rice map, and it's not showing it right now, but sometimes it takes it a few minutes to calculate that. So anyway, I like that. Radioland. This is for, iOS for your iPhone. I don't know if there's an Android version for that as well. So that's something I like. Chris Tarr, you got something you like?
I like weed. Lots of weed. No, I mean lots. No. What I really like is the weed thing threw me off. Kevo Mertz, they have something called the Facilities Activity Report, and you can sign up for this. I mean, it costs money per station. But for example, I have all of my stations set up, and every week on Saturday morning, I get an email that has, first of all, the first page is kind of the executive report. that shows anything that may be concerning to you in terms of applications filed the previous week that might affect your stations. So on AM, it'll show like, you know, co-channels across the country. On FMs, it shows things within, you know, 100 miles or whatever. And you can set those parameters. But now every week I get, you know, for all, you know, 25 of my stations and 20 translators, I get this huge report that shows everything that affects any of my stations or any of the markets. I can see what's going on. So it's a really good way. I mean, I look at the FCC databases every day for changes and things, but this is a great kind of a second check to make sure that if there's something going on near one of my facilities, I know about it. So if you go to their site, I believe it's $11 per station monitored. So, you know, if you have a handful of stations, it's a pretty affordable way to know if somebody is filing something that might affect you.
What's that site name again?
Cavell Mertz.
Cavell. Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, I heard. Okay.
Yeah. So it's the easiest way to get there is to go to FCC. What is it? FCCinfo.com.
FCC Info.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Didn't realize they had that monitoring service. That's cool. And you can, there's one of the cool things at Cavell and Mertz is I hope this wasn't yours, Jake, is that, what's that file type that you put in Google Earth?
The KML.
KML
file. I use that all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can zoom in on a tower and say, oh my goodness, there's all these microwave relays there. And yeah, that's cool. All right. All right. Jake, putting you on the spot here. What's
well, that was like actually today? Mine.
Oh, you got me.
That was not even planned. That was actually mine.
Thunder.
Really?
If you don't already know about it, though, the Cavell Mertz, the FCC Info, the Google Earth plugin is fantastic. Map out AM, FM stations, translators, microwave as well. I use that a ton for STL. In fact, we had an STL here about, 6-8 months ago. We started having issues with it and started mapping out possible interference. And as it would happen, there was actually another station that has a very similar path to ours. They're supposed to be 500 off from us, and they were operating on temporary gear because theirs had failed. And they're only operating 250 off instead of 500 like they were supposed to. And that was dipping into our STL and causing interference. So was able to look up, see who was facing that or who's going that direction and contacted them. And that first shot, oh yeah, it's probably us. So that's gotcha. Just an absolutely wonderful tool to have at your disposal.
Good idea. And there's no cost for that KML file.
You it's can free.
Download that.
Yep, best price.
It's free. All right. We're going to after the break, we're going to have things I don't like. And I think that's a more difficult topic because I, Chris Tarr, Jake Bechtold, we're all kind of positive engineers. We like to look at the bright side. And so things I don't like, what is annoying you? What should be fixed? What would you do differently? Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Angry Audio. And Chris Tarr is here to tell you something about them.
Yeah, Angry Audio, they come up with some of the greatest solutions for some of the problems we have, everyday issues and everyday little annoyances, and even just everyday kinds of gear that we need to get our jobs done. And one of the things I want to talk about today with Angry Audio, and I didn't even realize that they had made these up until I started talking to Catfish and he brought these up. Mika makes these really just gorgeous brushed aluminum LED lights of different colors. And I put one in one of the studios that I built, and they're fantastic lights. They're great. They're just, you know, they're gorgeous, but they're expensive because they're, you know, they're very well designed and they look really nice. Well, Angry Audio's come out with a version that is a lot more affordable. It's made of the ABS plastic, and they're black instead of the brushed aluminum. And we have that up on the webpage right now. So you can see they look a lot like the Mika ones, but they're a lot more affordable. And you know, as Catfish was saying, we love the Mika stuff. And if your budget works out for that, there's nothing wrong with going that route. They're gorgeous. But if, you know, you're working on a budget, these are a fantastic alternative. They do the same thing. And, but instead of having that really expensive design, they are a whole lot more affordable. And they use the RJ45s, they use Studio Hub, and you can get the Angry Audio light driver that goes with them. Now, you could use, if you just had a couple of lights, the one or two, you could use the Henry Engineer controller. But if you use the signal light gadget from Angry Audio, you can control each one of those lights by just plugging it in. That was actually, you mentioned earlier, the Super Relay. That's actually how I did my Mika lights when I put them in, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, is I used the Super Relay to do that. And that's a lot of wiring, and that can get really confusing with, you know, powering each one, getting the relay closures for each one. This gadget, the light gadget, makes this so much easier. You literally just take the, you know, the RJ45s and plug them in, and you're good to go. So this is one of those great things that, it's a great solution. It's for those of us who can't afford to get the really nice Mika lights, we can still get the functionality of these multicolored lights. And you could use like red for on air or for the hotline ringing, green for, you know, all these different, your mind's really your limit on what you can do with these lights. But they're a great addition, and I think you're really going to like them. I think you're going to find a lot of uses for them. And again, you know, when you, as they say, don't get mad when you get hung up on this stuff, get angry and go to Angry Audio and check out some of the solutions that they have there. This is one of them that I was really excited about because I love those Mika lights. It's just, you know, sometimes you just don't have the budget for something like that, but you really want that nice finishing touch. And that's a great alternative for that.
I can't wait until I hit the jackpot and see what that light does.
That's the other thing, you could do it for that if you wanted to. The sky's the limit to what you know, what you can do with those lights.
That's right. Thanks a lot, Angry Audio at angryaudio.com for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. And a real quick message from our friend Gary Morrill. He's going to tell you about this box right here. Gary?
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
And I've got one right here. It's a Max Connect 4G LTE modem with prioritized data. And the modem really isn't the key here. I mean, it can be another brand, but this one happens to be a Cradle Point, but there's others that work as well. It is the SIM card that goes inside and lets you connect to one of your favorite wireless carriers. And Jake Bechtold, Josh Bone. I don't know where that came from. Josh Bone.
JV.
That's it. And Max Connect has made agreements with the different carriers to get you prioritized data, prioritized over everybody else except first responders. AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, whatever you like. And even if you're in Canada, they've got a deal there as well. So check it out from Max Connect Wireless. I know it's spelled funny. There's a link in the show notes. And it's a great service. A lot of folks are loving this because it works well for them and solves a problem. All right. Things I don't like. Chris, this is a tough topic for you because you're such a happy, positive guy. Is there something you don't like?
Oh, no. I have something I hate.
Oh.
I despise.
Oh.
Oh, makes me angry. Plastic zip ties. I hate plastic zip ties. I would abolish plastic zip ties if I could. Whoever created them is evil. I much prefer Velcro for tying up and dressing wires. You know, the problem with zip ties, as we all know, people put the things together, they zip them up, and then you can't make any changes. If you need to add a wire or you need to, you know, take one out, you're having to cut them back off, put new ones on, or, you know, they don't cut them cleanly and they got the little points and you scrape up your hands and, I don't know why. I just have a thing for these zip ties. I don't like them. So I actually make a point, and with my team as well, we use Velcro for everything. So when you tie up a bundle of cables, you use a Velcro. It's really easy to un-Velcro, throw another one in there, take one out, Velcro it back up. They look nice and neat, and it's just a much better way and a much more efficient way to do wiring.
Good point. Good point. So you don't lace your wire, your cable runs anymore.
Who laces cable rods anymore?
Nobody. I guess nobody
does that. They just use a ton of cable ties and zip ties and, you know, zip them up.
Yeah. Good point. You know, I don't disagree with you. I don't think I hate them quite as much as you do, but because I do use them. But you make some good points, and Velcro would be better. How do you get your Velcro wraps, and how do you get them cheaply enough to where you're satisfied?
Amazon. You can get, you know, I think I just bought four rolls of ones that actually will separate, and they have the tabs in them, so you can actually loop them through and tie them tight. I was like $20 for four rolls or something. I mean, even if you wanted to go even cheaper, you can buy, you know, the big bulk rolls and just cut off what you need. I mean, they're just, in fact, they're actually probably cheaper than buying a whole bunch of good quality zip ties.
Yeah, you could be right. You'd be right. Wow. So I'll give a real quick thing I don't like, and then we'll ask Jake. Lately, I have made some Cat 5e cables, and I remember to put the boot on first, right? And so I don't have to run it 30 feet from the other end, and then put the RJ45 on, slide the boot over, and then I go to push this into whatever device or Ethernet switch or whatever that it's going into. And it pulls right back out. It doesn't, the tab doesn't latch into it. And I find out that the boot is interfering with the tab. The boot is actually holding the end of the plastic tab down just enough to where it doesn't snap into place. And so these boots, and I'm sure I bought the cheapest boots out there. So I don't like these boots that hold the tab down. And of course, if you don't push them all the way to cover the tab, then the boot serves no purpose anymore anyway. And I'd like to ask you, Chris, have you found a solution about, or have you run into this problem, and what would be your solution to it?
You know, actually, I got to be honest with you. I missed part of what you were saying because my browser crashed.
You were talking about the
tabs on the Cat 5s?
Yeah, a bunch of boots that I bought recently to go over that you put on first and then slide it back over the RJ45 you put on. The little arch in it that's supposed to, you know, let the tab go in holds the tab down just a little bit, just enough to where it just pulls right back out of whatever equipment.
Either that or they're so stiff that you can't push it down enough to release the tab. I actually, even if I do get cables with the boots, I generally don't use the boots. I don't know that they, they look clean and they're nice that way, but I've just had more problems than not with the boots. So I usually just skip them.
Gotcha. All right. Well, let's see what Jake thinks either about that or about his own pet peeve. Jake?
Well, it's funny you mention that with the boots, because I've been doing the same thing, and I think it's because, you know, they make, it's the, and I forget what brand it is, but it's the pass-through, and I'm going to get some flack for admitting to using the pass-through RJ45s. So I'm sure I'll be burned at the stake for that, but it's a certain brand of those, and then there's a certain brand of boot, and I have found that those brands have to match. If you try and mix-match, say you find some knockoffs on Amazon or something, if you try and mix and match, they don't crimp right. And I think that's what the problem is. At least that's what I found anyway. But much like Chris, I have just not put the boot on. I've left it out without it. I used to be a big, you know, proponent of, oh, maybe it's got to have a boot on it. Just lately I've kind of just gone without it. And it's been fine.
I gotta be honest with you, Jake. I used to poo-poo the pass-through connectors until I started using them. They're awesome. I love them. I mean, I used to, I when I first saw one of my coworkers use it, I'm like, what is that? Real men don't use pass-throughs. and then I started using them, and they're amazing. In fact, they're giving me a hard time. He's like, oh, I see you're using pass-through connectors. And I had to be tied to act tough. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, whatever. It's all I had. You know, I forget about it. But they're awesome. I love them.
The trick on those is make sure you've got the tool and make sure it's set up correctly. Because if you do those wrong, you can absolutely have problems. So that's a trick with those. Make sure they crimp correctly.
Yep.
The only thing about and I love the pass-throughs too. When I was in American Samoa building my station there 5 years ago now, or we were moving it, all they had on the island, somehow we forgot to order any RJ45s, and all they had on the island was the pass-through kind. They had the pass-through connectors. So we spent all the money on that. And I kind of liked them, but I've gotten really good at the non-pass-through type of getting those cables all sorted out in the right color order, holding them together, getting them just the right length, putting them in there, crimping them down. I've gotten so good at that. And
you get them all in the right order, except for that one pair that's reversed. You couldn't see it. Pass-throughs, you can verify all that before you even crimp it down.
I'll join you, but I'll maintain my membership in the non-pass-through club.
One of us.
Jake Bechtold, thank you so much for joining us, me and Chris, to talk about engineering stuff. It's been a delight.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, we'll have you back sometime. You know, when you do something significant, let us know.
Yeah, we'll keep waiting on that.
Chris, I guess you're coming back next week, whether you do something significant or not.
Yeah. You keep asking me back. That's on you, man. That's on you.
I know. Next week, Chris, we've got a fellow with an interesting name. We have Jean-Luc Wassmer. Jean-Luc Wassmer is going to be with us. We're going to be talking about streaming.
He's German, isn't he?
I don't know. I thought Jean-Luc was French and Wassmer sounds German. So I don't know. He's from a mixed family, apparently. So he'll be here to talk about programmatic stuff. And it's not deep engineering, although engineers play into this stuff all working right, but it has to do with programmatic ad insertion and streaming and things like that. And I really think it's important that engineers understand how that works so they cannot be part of the problem of it not working right. Make sense? That's to me, because depends on the engineer. Well, just like everything else we do in broadcasting, the engineer needs to be part of it all working right. So that's coming up. Chris Tarr, thank you very much for being with us today. I appreciate you very much, buddy.
Glad to be here as always.
All right. And Suncast has been our producer today. Thanks, Suncast, for being on it. I appreciate it very much. Also, thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.